Today is Monday, March 1st, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, COVID relief bill heads to the U.S. Senate.
The bill, which includes a $1,400 check for most Americans, can't lose a single Democratic vote in the chamber.
Also, 47 Hong Kong Democrats charged with conspiracy to commit subversion.
More than 50 other Democrats were arrested on January 6th in the largest national security operation since the law's passage.
Plus, anti-coup protesters back on Myanmar streets. These stories and more are next. After passage in the U.S. House of Representatives with Democrats' support only, President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package heads to the Senate, where it will test his call for unity. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
COVID-19 infection rates are dropping in the United States, and the government has given emergency approval for a third vaccine. But the economic fallout continues. President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief package aims to help the unemployed, along with troubled school districts and teetering industries. The bill passed the House with just Democratic support. It now heads to the 100-member Senate, which is evenly split between Democrats and Republicans, with Vice President Kamala Harris, a Democrat, able to break a tie. The bill, which includes a $1,400 check for most Americans, can't lose a single Democratic vote in the chamber. Not all Democrats are unified behind the bill, with some wanting to fight to increase the hourly minimum wage to $15, which is not in the Senate version. Senator Mazie Hirono is a Democrat from Hawaii who spoke on ABC this week.
I basically support raising the minimum wage in the COVID bill because that is a huge part of economic recovery. The people who are suffering most from the minimum wage and what's happening in the pandemic are the essential workers. Many of them are women. Many of them are getting paid very low wages.
Some Democratic senators are suggesting that instead of raising the minimum wage directly in the bill, they could do other things, like restrict tax breaks to corporations that don't increase wages. Republicans argue for a more narrowly focused economic stimulus package. Senator Rob Portman is a Republican from Ohio who spoke on ABC this week.
It's not targeted. We have a Republican alternative. As you know, we've been talking to the president's people about it, but gotten no response, which is much more targeted and focused on the real health care and economic matters that are urgent.
Democratic leaders want the bill to become law by March 14th, when jobless benefits expire. If it passes, the relief package will be the sixth round of aid from the federal government during the pandemic. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Donald Trump slammed President Joe Biden's policies and reaffirmed leadership of the Republican Party at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Florida on Sunday, his first major speech after leaving office. He hinted, but did not confirm, that he will run again in 2024. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara has the story.
At the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, in Florida on Sunday, there was no doubt who the attendees revered.
I'm here to support President Trump all the way. He is the best president in my lifetime.
The annual event, previously a platform to highlight conservative ideas, this year was all about Donald Trump. Bucking tradition of former presidents staying out of politics, Trump slammed his successor, President Joe Biden.
Joe Biden has had the most disastrous first month of any president in modern history. That's true. Already, the Biden administration has proven that they are anti-jobs, anti-family, anti-borders, anti-energy, anti-women, and anti-science.
Biden spent Sunday at church with family in his hometown in Delaware. The White House has dismissed Trump's speech ahead of CPAC. Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
We're not going to spend too much time here focused on or talking about President Trump, former President Trump.
Trump hinted but did not confirm that he will run again in 2024. He did make clear he intends to maintain control over the party, despite being criticized by some Republicans for his role in inciting the January 6 riots. Thousands of his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol as lawmakers certified Biden's electoral victory.
They kept saying, he's going to start a brand new party. We have the Republican Party. It's going to unite and be stronger than ever before. I am not starting a new party.
Trump repeated threats to unseat Republican lawmakers he deemed insufficiently loyal, including those who voted to impeach him. He did not mention the Capitol riots and continued to push the false narrative that he won the election. This will deepen divisions within the party and drive moderates away, said director of the Republican Accountability Project, Olivia Troy.
They're looking to find candidates that are more representative of trying to work for what's right for America, right? Doing the right thing for the country, working with Democrats, reaching across the aisle instead of this toxic divisiveness and hatred that sort of has taken hold.
The conference, usually convened in Washington, was held in Florida, a state with looser COVID restrictions. Many attendees did not observe health protocols. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Police in Myanmar's biggest city fired volleys of tear gas at defiant crowds who returned to the streets to continue protesting the military's seizure of power a month ago, despite reports that security forces had killed at least 18 people around the country a day earlier. The protesters in Yangon were chased as they tried to gather at their usual main meeting spot. Emily Wither reports.
Myanmar is being described as a battlefield. In the bloodiest day of weeks of demonstrations against a military coup, the police brutally cracked down on protesters across the country. Witnesses say they're using all means possible. Stun grenades, tear gas, and bullets. Protesters were killed when the police opened fire in the country's largest city, Yangon. One doctor said a man had died after being brought to hospital with a bullet wound in the chest. Police also opened fire in the southern town of Dawi, killing three and wounding several. But the deadly force isn't stopping the masses from pouring onto the streets.
We are facing so many crackdowns across the country, but yet people came out to protest again without fear. We have so much courage from CRPH and our UN ambassador in the UK. Even the Rangers are joining the movement.
The country has been in chaos since the army seized power and detained elected government leader Aung San Suu Kyi and much of her party leadership on February 1st. The military are alleging fraud in a November election her party won in a landslide. The coup has brought to a halt tentative steps towards democracy after nearly 50 years of military rule. Police and the spokesman for the ruling military council did not respond to phone calls seeking comment. As hundreds are detained across the country, the crackdown appears to show a determination by the military to impose its authority in the face of widespread defiance. The next hearing in Suu Kyi's case is on Monday.
That's Emily Wither of Reuters. 47 Hong Kong Democrats and activists were charged on Sunday with conspiracy to commit subversion in the largest single crackdown on the Democratic opposition under a China-imposed national security law. Imam McCarthy of Reuters reports.
In the largest single crackdown yet, dozens of Democrats and activists were charged in Hong Kong Sunday with conspiracy to commit subversion. Sam Chung, an activist and a participant in an unofficial primary election last summer, was charged after reporting to a local police station, accompanied by his wife. More than 50 other Democrats were arrested on January 6 in the largest national security operation since the law's passage last June and later released on bail. Former lawmaker Helena Wong was among those arrested.
After we went through these few years, even for people like me who are devoted to the democratic movement for decades, since the 1980s, we realized as long as we don't give up, the seeds of democracy will germinate in the hearts of Hong Kong people. Neither the national security law nor the national security police can take this seed away from our hearts. Therefore, I have great confidence in the people of Hong Kong that the democratic movement will continue.
They were accused of organising and participating in an unofficial primary election last July aimed at selecting the strongest candidates for a Legislative Council election. Hong Kong police said in a statement they had laid a charge against 47 people and they'll appear in court Monday morning. The police say 99 individuals have been arrested for suspected violations of the security laws so far, which critics see as a threat to Hong Kong's freedoms and autonomy. The laws punish acts of subversion, secession, collusion with foreign forces and terrorism, with possible life imprisonment.
That's Imam McCarthy of Reuters. Gunmen on Saturday released 27 teenage boys who were kidnapped from their school last week in Nigeria's north central state of Niger, while security forces continued to search for 317 schoolgirls abducted Friday in the nearby state of Zamfara. Reuters' Gillian Kitchener has more.
Gunmen in Nigeria on Saturday released 27 teenage boys who were kidnapped from their school earlier this month. Their release was met by tearful loved ones. On February 17th, 42 people, including 27 students, were abducted by an armed gang that stormed a secondary school in Niger State. One boy was killed during the raid. One remains in the hospital, according to the Niger State governor. Also on Saturday, police mounted a search for 317 schoolgirls who were abducted Friday in a nearby state. Concerned parents waited in the school compound for updates. One of them said he was hopeful his daughter would be brought back home, saying the captors were bandits.
They are already up to ransom, so I believe when the government settle with them, they will immediately release our daughters.
Schools have become targets for mass kidnappings for ransom in northern Nigeria by armed groups whose agenda is unclear. The highest profile school kidnapping was that of more than 270 schoolgirls abducted by Boko Haram from the town of Chibok in 2014. Around 100 girls remain missing.
That's Gillian Kitchener of Reuters. 3 years ago this month, Boko Haram abducted 110 girls from a school in Dapchi, Nigeria. One girl, Leah Sheribu, remains in captivity. Her parents remain hopeful she will be freed, but say the government is doing nothing to ensure her release. Percy Dabang reports from Yola, Nigeria.
Leah's mother, Rebecca Sheribu, says they are still counting on the promises made by the government of President Muhammadu Buhari regarding her release. Out of the 110 girls abducted, it is only my daughter that has not been released, she says. Why did he not adopt the same means he used in gaining the release of the others to free my girl? They negotiate for the release of those kidnapped in Katsina State, says Sheribu. Why wouldn't they negotiate for my daughter's release? Just one girl. Security expert Lionel Rollins says the government is caught in a bind when it comes to rescuing Leah Sheribu.
The only way, though, they can do that is by offering money. Because we can't go and storm the Sambisa Forest and, with a forceful rescue. So you have to give money in return for her, or give up some prisoners in return for Leah. The problem with that, though, is if Leah is released and the government paid for her release, all the parents who have children who were kidnapped by Boko Haram, who are also held in the Sambisa, they would ask, well, what about me?
There were reports in 2019 that Leah delivered a baby boy in captivity, but her father, Natal Sheribu, says that is not true. He is calling on Buhari to ensure Leah's safe return.
He has promised several times to the family. He promised the nation, he promised the whole world, that his administration will do his possible best to see that my daughter returns home safely. So I'm pleading to him, being a father, a grandfather, to do his possible best to see my daughter return home safely. Please, I'm begging him.
Buhari, in 2019, said officials will ensure the release of everyone being held by Boko Haram and other armed groups. Boko Haram alone is believed to be holding more than 100 captives, almost all of them Chibok girls, the group abducted 7 years ago. Percy Dabang for VOA News, Yola, Nigeria.
This is the Voice of America. Spanish police have entered Barcelona Stadium in a search and seize operation. The club says authorities were at the team's headquarters but did not provide any more details. Spanish media say the operation is related to last year's, quote, Barca Gate, unquote. Club officials were accused of launching a smear campaign against current and former players who were critical of the club and then-president Josep Maria Bartomeu. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has accused Iran of attacking an Israeli-owned ship in the Gulf of Oman last week. Netanyahu spoke on Monday to Israel public broadcaster Kan and said that, quote, it was indeed an act by Iran, that's clear, unquote. Iran has rejected the accusations. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Katzabadeh said Netanyahu was, quote, suffering from an obsession with Iran, unquote, and described his charges as, quote, fear-mongering, unquote. UN relief workers estimate that over 240,000 people have been displaced in the Central African Republic since mid-December when rebels calling themselves the Coalition of Patriots for Change launched attacks first to disrupt the December 27 elections and then to destabilize the newly elected government of President Faustin Archange Touadera. The rebels' fighting has enveloped the country and caused a humanitarian crisis in the already unstable nation. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. 60 years ago, President John F. Kennedy signed an executive order putting in place the Peace Corps, an international volunteer organization to promote peace and friendship. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has more on the challenging and rewarding experiences of so many who have taken part over the years.
The vision was born six decades ago. Former President John F. Kennedy outlined the program and prospects of young Americans going abroad to not only serve shoulder to shoulder with citizens of other countries, but also learn from them.
What is remarkable is that there is no salary for the members of the Peace Corps. They will go abroad and live on the same standard as people of other countries, but they will work with them 2 or 3 years, devoting part of their lives to peace and to strengthening the ties that bind men together all over the globe.
It was an audacious idea at the time, some said, but fast forward 60 years, the idea has been realized, says John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum Director Alan Price.
It's been a fantastic idea, thanks to the hard work of volunteers and the hard work of host countries. I think that the goal has a long-term strategy to promote peace and friendship has been largely successful.
In the past 60 years, about 241,000 Peace Corps volunteers have served in more than 140 countries worldwide, says Peace Corps Acting Director Carol Spahn, who also noted a variety in the ages of participants.
Peace Corps volunteers range in age from 20 to 85. The bulk of them, you know, tend to be in their 20s. But when I was serving as country director in Malawi, we had one of the oldest serving volunteers at that time. She was 82 years old and just a pistol. She was terrific.
Spahn was 26 when she decided to serve in the Peace Corps in Romania. It was 3 years after the fall of communism. Some people were suspicious, she says, but it was a life-changing experience for her.
What happens with many volunteers is you go into Peace Corps with a certain worldview or some expectations of why things are the way they are. And as you live and work with people that are different from yourselves, you start to ask questions. And when you go in with curiosity, you learn what's behind why things maybe happen differently than they do in your own country, or why people hold certain values, and what that history is.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Cracks are emerging in the firewall that until now has protected some of the world's most powerful nations from being scrutinized and called to account for gross violations by the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The executive director of Human Rights Watch, Kenneth Roth, called them the untouchables.
And by that, I mean governments that have managed to avoid any real critical scrutiny in the form of a resolution by the council. And the foremost untouchables that I have in mind are China, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Russia.
Addressing the untouchables, Roth said, is not only the biggest challenge facing the council, but is critical to its credibility. He said efforts are underway to draft critical statements on Egypt and Saudi Arabia. He added pressure is growing on Russia because of its alleged poisoning of opposition activist Alexei Navalny. However, of greatest interest, he says, are emerging signs that China may no longer be untouchable.
You know, it has been seen as politically impossible to address the worsening repression in Xinjiang, the ongoing repression in Tibet, the crushing of Hong Kong's freedoms. It was seen as just, you know, impossible to get past China's enormous diplomatic and economic efforts to prevent that kind of critical scrutiny. But the times are changing.
International criticism of China's alleged internment of at least 1 million Uyghur Muslims in so-called vocational education camps hit new heights during the council session's high-level segment last week. In a hard-hitting statement, British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab called the situation in Xinjiang beyond the pale.
The reported abuses, which include torture, forced labor, and forced sterilization of women, are extreme and they are extensive. They're taking place on an industrial scale. It must be our collective duty to ensure that this does not go unanswered. UN mechanisms must respond.
Raab called on the Council to pass a resolution allowing urgent and unfettered access to Xinjiang by the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights or another independent fact-finding expert. Raab also condemned the systematic violation of rights in Hong Kong and restrictions in Tibet. His denunciations of China's repressive actions were supported by German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
New research has revealed that environmental damage caused by Australia's 5,600-kilometre dingo fence is so vast it can't be seen from space. Satellite images have documented changes on both sides of one of the world's longest human-made structures, which stretches across three Australian states. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Dingoes are descended from South Asian wolves. They rarely bark but tend to howl. They're thought to have arrived in Australia with Asian seafarers about 3,500 years ago. A study of the 5,600-kilometre dingo fence in the red sand dunes of the Strzelecki Desert in central Australia has revealed what happens when a key predator is removed. Adrian Fisher is a lecturer in remote sensing at the University of New South Wales.
Using 32 years of satellite images, we saw that the dynamics of the vegetation cover was different on either side of the fence. On the side where dingoes are rare, we found many more kangaroos whose grazing lowered the grass cover across the landscape.
Fisher says that overgrazing damages soil quality, making the ground more vulnerable to erosion. He says dingoes not only keep kangaroo populations in check, they can also limit the ecological damage caused by feral pests.
It's clear that dingoes keep kangaroo numbers low, and where there are dingoes, there are fewer foxes and cats. This means that outside the fence, it's common to find small native mammals like the dusky hopping mouse. Together with the satellite images, this research clearly shows that the removal of the apex predator has had widespread effects on the landscape and its biodiversity. To restore and conserve these ecosystems, the important role of the dingo needs to be acknowledged.
The fence was built in Australia in the early 20th century to help protect sheep. Tearing parts of it down would threaten the livestock industry. But the authors of the university study hope that a balance can be found that restores ecosystems and protects farms. The University of New South Wales study was published in the journal Landscape Ecology. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.